Welcome to Prevention Matters. I'm Damon Thompson, Communications Director at Partnership for Prevention. We're a nonprofit organization of leaders from the business, healthcare, and government communities who are dedicated to making disease prevention and health promotion a national priority. Each week, we'll be talking with some of the key players in the world of prevention and health policy. Today, we're talking with Dr. Kelly Brownell, a professor and director of the Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity at Yale University. Dr. Brownell led a group of prominent researchers recently who published an article in the September 17th issue of the New England Journal of Medicine, made a strong public health case for a tax on sweetened sodas and other beverages. The study has generated considerable debate, and while Congress has not yet incorporated such a proposal into its health reform legislation, Dr. Brownell has continued to press for such steps to be taken at the federal and state levels. Welcome to the show, Dr. Brownell.
Thank you, Damon, for having me.
So tell us, what is the public health case for a soda tax?
The problem with sugared beverages in particular is that they are contributing a great deal of calories to the American diet. You couple sugar and caffeine in many of them, and that's not a very good combination. And the consumption of these beverages is linked to a number of risks for a number of important diseases like obesity and diabetes, and most recently, a study found even heart disease. So there's a very compelling public health case to be made for reducing the population consumption of beverages with added sugar.
Now, you say a penny per ounce tax on sweetened beverages would raise an estimated $14.9 billion a year in revenue. How'd you come up with that figure?
Well, those numbers are not too hard to come up with because you can just calculate how much soda people are not soda and sweetened beverages, not just old-fashioned carbonated beverages. You can figure out how much the population is consuming and figure out how many ounces that is, figure a penny per ounce, and that's what it comes to. And, you know, we all lose track of how big these numbers are when we're used to hearing things in billions of dollars, but almost $15 billion a year at the federal level is an enormous amount of money. And if that money were wisely used for programs that could, say, prevent obesity and improve childhood nutrition, then you've really hit a home run because you decrease population consumption of the beverages, thereby improving health, and then you could use the revenue to improve health, especially for the populations that could most use it.
Now, it's funny, but the beverage industry has said repeatedly in its advertisements and direct lobbying that the revenue, and I'm quoting, says, won't make a dent in health reform efforts. Do you agree that $15 billion a year won't make a dent?
Well, the industry hasn't, they've talked about this not making a dent in the obesity problem. And the fact that they're fighting it so hard is probably evidence that it would make a dent, because if this weren't going to affect sales of the sugared beverages, why would the industry care to fight it so much? They've done major lobbying in Washington. They've taken out a major ad campaign around the country and spent, I can't even begin to guess how much money on that. And the fact that they're doing this indicates to me that this probably would be a good public health measure because they're worried about losing sales. The question is, how much difference would it make in a disease like obesity? And because obesity and diabetes and things are caused by so many different factors, changing any one is not going to make a major difference. You have to do a lot of different things, but you have to start somewhere, and it makes sense to start where the science is strongest, and that is true of sugared beverages.
Now, the industry also says that education is the real key, and that we should be educating people about physical activity and nutrition rather than taxing of products that people use. How would you respond to that?
Well, people get a lot of nutrition education, but it's almost all done by the food industry. The food industry, for example, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is spending $100 million a year to try to help deal with the childhood obesity problem. And it's an absolute gift from heaven in terms of doing something important with an important issue. But the food industry spends that much by January 4th every year just to advertise unhealthy foods just to children. And when you see numbers like that, you get a sense of how overwhelming the influence by industry is. So how could you ever compete with that with a government education program? Is the government willing to spend $100 million just by January 4th, and then by January 8th it would have to be double, just to keep up with what the industry is spending, mainly to convince people to eat unhealthy foods? It's just not a fair contest. So there's education is a complete distraction. It's important to do. Some of it should be done, but because nobody could pony up enough money to make this really happen, it's important that government get involved and stop the bad influences.
So you would agree that education's an important key, but you've got to have something to fund the educating.
That's exactly right. I mean, it's certainly not sufficient to make major change, and it might not even be necessary. So I wouldn't myself devote a lot of money to doing the education, but instead I'd try to change the conditions that are driving some of these dietary issues in the first place. And the heavy promotion of and sales of sugar-sweetened beverages is one of the problems. Not the only one, but one of them.
Now, is it fair to pick on one particular product, like sweetened beverages or soft drinks, when the consumption of all different types of food contribute to the current obesity epidemic?
It's a very good question, and the industry, the beverage industry, does say this a lot. Why are you picking on us? And in my mind, the only if you want to propose, like as we do, something as controversial as a tax, then you better be on very solid scientific ground. And right now, the science linking sugar-sweetened beverage intake with a number of negative health outcomes is rock solid. That's not true for other food categories. It may be at some point, perhaps even soon, but it's not the case yet. And so we can be pretty certain that a tax on sugar-sweetened beverages can be justified by the science and would have a positive public health outcome. We'll have to wait for data on other categories of foods to see if they join that class.
So you want to concentrate where the science is solid?
We absolutely want to concentrate where the science is solid, because to do otherwise might lead down a road that wouldn't be productive from a public health point of view. And given that a lot of political capital is going to be required to develop policies like this, you want to make sure that you're on sound ground.
Well, what about the argument about regressivity? There's even some folks in the public health community that say a tax on something like sodas or sweet beverages would be regressive and unfair to low-income populations. And they say that taxing sodas, it's not the same thing as tobacco, because sodas can be consumed safely while tobacco cannot. So how do you respond to that?
The regressive tax concern is a very real one, and I appreciate that as an issue. Our response is as follows, that obesity and diabetes and other diet-related diseases are regressive diseases. They tend to most hurt the poorest people in the population. Second is that the beverage industry has spent many years trying to cultivate people in that group, just like they have the rest of society, as customers. And for the industry now to say, well, we think it would be unfair to tax things that we've been telling them all along they should be drink because they're glamorous and sexy and athletic and all those things seems a little unusual. And then finally, we have never advocated a tax in the absence of using the revenue for programs that would specifically help the most vulnerable people in the population, namely the poor. And so if the money were being taken from the sales of these beverages and then given back to the communities that most need the help, we think the tax is very much justified.
Well, I guess, again, sticking with the parallel to the tobacco situation, that's exactly what you didn't see happen in most places when the tobacco settlement was awarded and states got windfalls from the tobacco companies. And rather than spending it on health outcomes, they invested in brick and mortar and all different kinds of programs. So you'd say you would not want to see a repeat of that.
No, we absolutely wouldn't. And the fact that, well, the tobacco experience was mixed. In some cases, the money went to things completely unrelated to health, in a lot of cases just to repair budget deficits in states. But in some cases, the money was used very wisely, and California is the best example of that. They really did use a lot of the money for anti-tobacco and other health-related programs, and that money has made a big difference in the state. So the decline of smoking in California is much greater than the national average, probably because of that. So in considering something like a tax on sugared beverages, it's very important for the advocacy community, the public health community, and of course the legislators to be absolutely certain that the revenue gets used for programs related to the tax.
So why do you think Congress has resisted taking such action so far? President Obama spoke rather favorably of such a proposal early in the year, but it just really hasn't been put on the table.
I think we're seeing the first steps in the tax really happening, just like with tobacco. When the idea was first floated with tobacco, it was met with derision and heavy lobbying by the industry. And then as time went on and more proposals came forward, it started to seem more normative. And now the tobacco taxes are just a part of everyday life. And I expect the mixed support at the moment will change with time into greater and greater support as we go forward. And then finally, we'll get to the point where the taxes are routine.
Now, in the meantime, you, while waiting for Congress, you've urged that the state of California should consider enacting such a tax and, in effect, become a laboratory to test the findings that that you and your colleagues have made. Why California, and what do you think the chances of success are there?
To the extent the tobacco taxes are any parallel, action will occur first in the states. And after the states have done this for some time, the federal government will catch up. And so the fact that California is considering it isn't surprising because they're quite progressive with these type of things. And if they come forth and do a tax on sugared beverages, and it's hard for me to predict the likelihood at this point because I'm not a political pollster and nor am I a politician, but my reading of the tea leaves as best I can is that support for this has been going up and up and up. So if it doesn't succeed the first time around in California, probably the second or third time it will. And also, the fact that the federal government needs money so much, especially to fund health care reform, has put it on the federal agenda ahead of when I would have expected it to occur. So the fact that it's been discussed at all is, I think, very encouraging. And it might pop back into the picture at the 11th hour as politicians have to find ways of funding health care reform.
You recently had a column in the Los Angeles Times pushing the idea of the tax in California. What kind of response have you gotten to that?
Quite positive. Not everybody agrees with it, of course, and there are the people who just don't believe in any taxes under any circumstances. There are other people who say that government should stay out of decisions about what people eat and things like that. But overall, the response has been fairly positive. I'd say actually quite positive in the people that have contacted us. And I've been proposing this idea of a tax now for 15 years. I started first with an op-ed in the New York Times and then wrote about it a lot in the professional literature. And if I just track the comments people have sent to me by email or by regular mail, they've grown much more positive over time. So I think it's an idea whose time has either come or will soon come. At least that's what I hope will happen.
You mentioned that comments you've heard over time, but I noticed in the New England Journal of Medicine article you reached way back over time and found a quote from Adam Smith, the guru of laissez-faire economics, to bolster your case. Would you share that with us and tell how you think it applies today?
Yes, this was a paper that I published in April with Thomas Frieden, who at the time was health commissioner of New York City and is now the director of the Centers for Disease Control. And we started the paper with this quote from Adam Smith that was in The Wealth of Nations, written in 1776, and it goes as follows. Sugar, rum, and tobacco are commodities which are nowhere necessities of life, which are become objects of almost universal consumption, and which are therefore extremely proper subjects of taxation. End of quote. And the point there is that these are things that are not necessary for survival and hence should be considered objects of taxation. And certainly sugar-sweetened beverages are not necessary for survival, especially when there are plenty of alternatives, including free ones like tap water.
So where do you go from here in your work in this area, and how can people learn more about what you're talking about?
People can learn more about this by coming to the website of the Rudd Center that I direct, and it's really a very nice website with lots of information, including a free email newsletter that people can subscribe to that comes out monthly, and by visiting our website. And the website is www.YaleRuddCenter.org. So it's Y-A-L-E, Yale, Rudd, R-U-D-D, center.org. And as I said, there's a lot of information there, and we'll keep people posted on work we're doing in the future. So we'll continue to work on the tax idea, but we're also working on other public policy proposals such as menu labeling, and also have a deep interest in issues such as marketing of food to children.
Wonderful. Well, thanks for your time, Doctor. Our guest has been Dr. Kelly Brownell. I'm Damon Thompson for Partnership for Prevention. Wishing you a good day and reminding you that prevention matters.